This is Anglia Examinations England. Listening Examination. Level 3. Paper CC Masters 115. Instructions. These sections require you to listen to a selection of recorded material and answer the accompanying questions. Sections L1 and L2 will be heard twice. Sections L3 and L4W1 will be heard once only. There will be a pause before each part to allow you to read the questions, and other pauses to let you think about your answers. When you hear this tone, you should write your answers on the question paper. Write clearly in the spaces provided. You must ask any questions now, as you cannot speak during the test. Listen to the first part of the test. Section L1. You are going to listen to an interview with Dan Prowse, a food producer who wants people to eat more insects. Answer the 8 questions below by marking the correct box with a tick. You will hear the recording twice.
Dan, you are the head of Endo, one of the leading companies selling edible insects. You're well known for being concerned about the environment as a whole. When did these concerns start?
Well, before insects, I was actually more passionate about water. This began in my childhood, exploring the Colorado River. It was on a post-college hiking trip with some friends to Central America that I had first-hand experience of water supply problems. Until then, I'd been an outdoorsy type, but spared little thought to anything beyond my own needs. Talking to people on this trip made me grasp how unsustainable our water supply is, and I returned to the US to complete a degree in hydrology.
So how did you end up in your present career path?
The Colorado River is drying up. Agriculture uses 90% of its fresh water, and I was becoming increasingly disheartened by being ignored by the agricultural industry. It came to a head after I broke my leg. I was at home with my leg in plaster, and there was an interview with a professor on the radio about edible insects. He talked about the potential water savings from swapping insects for traditional proteins such as soy and grain, and I realised I could play a part.
So, what is it about insects that's so great? Do you really think insect food will catch on?
I'm sure of it. Insects convert grain into edible protein 10 times more efficiently than cattle. They need a fraction of the water and far less land. Environmentally and health-wise, they're a no-brainer. But these alone aren't enough to get customers. Resistance to the idea of this kind of food is deeply ingrained. The only more powerful force than that, particularly in this economic climate, is the pocket. There's a huge psychological difference between eating a crunchy fried cricket and something made from finely ground cricket flour. If the price is right, the market will be there.
I know your company produces energy bars. Have they all been successful?
We produce bars made from cricket flour in 3 flavours: Chaco peanut butter, Aztec dark chocolate, and Thai coconut. We did blind taste tests on our recipes to get feedback. We were spot on with the coconut one. We weren't sure about it, but we've only had to tweak it a tiny bit since the blind tasting. The peanut and the chocolate required more work, as there were textural issues. Some testers felt uneasy when they bit into crunchy peanut butter or cocoa beans.
You've given several talks on the properties of insects, mostly in New York. Why there?
Apart from the fact that it's a great place with gorgeous food, it's a trailblazer when it comes to our aversion to suspicious food. Back in the 60s, people considered raw fish to be bait. Cooked was fine, but raw? An entrepreneur opened a sushi bar catering to Japanese businessmen. Within 3 years, there were 10 more in the city. There are now 600, and it's not just there. There were 700 in Los Angeles. The sushi appetite has just soared everywhere. While our company has always been based in Denver, promotion in New York certainly helps with our marketing.
Are your energy bars available nationwide?
Not yet. There are about 200 outlets selling our products, typically sports stores and natural food stores, the former holding the greater market share by a long way. Our target market is the sort who are on the go, outdoor-minded and open to change. Getting into local supermarkets is our end goal. If you can't find an outlet nearby, go into your local gym or natural food shop and tell them you want them to start stocking Endo cricket bars.
Finding all these crickets must be a bit of a challenge.
We had planned to open a cricket farm ourselves and may well go down that route, but at present we're happy to source them. We initially looked at farms in markets where insect consumption is common, like Thailand. Few are geared up for the export market, so we reached out to larger operations at home, such as cricket farms for the pet food industry, and asked them about raising crickets for human consumption. They agreed to tweak their rearing practices to meet health standards. We're working with these partners to achieve a more sustainable, large-scale supply of organically farmed insects, although this won't happen overnight.
How do you farm crickets?
In Thailand, farmers use vegetable waste as feed, which is efficient when you have a smaller setup. Here, the common practice is to feed the crickets livestock feed. There are a couple of paths you can take. You can use wet food products only, meaning they'll get the water they need from their food. This can mean the food easily goes off. To avoid this waste, most use dry food with additional water. You feed them once at the beginning of their lifespan, and that's what they eat until they die 6 weeks later. Now listen to section L1 again.
Dan, you are the head of Endo, one of the leading companies selling edible insects. You're well known for being concerned about the environment as a whole. When did these concerns start?
Well, before insects, I was actually more passionate about water. This began in my childhood, exploring the Colorado River. It was on a post-college hiking trip with some friends to Central America that I had first-hand experience of water supply problems. Until then, I'd been an outdoorsy type, but spared little thought to anything beyond my own needs. Talking to people on this trip made me grasp how unsustainable our water supply is, and I returned to the US to complete a degree in hydrology.
So how did you end up in your present career path?
The Colorado River is drying up. Agriculture uses 90% of its fresh water, and I was becoming increasingly disheartened by being ignored by the agricultural industry. It came to a head after I broke my leg. I was at home with my leg in plaster, and there was an interview with a professor on the radio about edible insects. He talked about the potential water savings from swapping insects for traditional proteins such as soy and grain, and I realised I could play a part.
So, what is it about insects that's so great? Do you really think insect food will catch on?
I'm sure of it. Insects convert grain into edible protein 10 times more efficiently than cattle. They need a fraction of the water and far less land. Environmentally and health-wise, they're a no-brainer. But these alone aren't enough to get customers. Resistance to the idea of this kind of food is deeply ingrained. The only more powerful force than that, particularly in this economic climate, is the pocket. There's a huge psychological difference between eating a crunchy fried cricket and something made from finely ground cricket flour. If the price is right, the market will be there.
I know your company produces energy bars. Have they all been successful?
We produce bars made from cricket flour in 3 flavours, Chaco peanut butter, Aztec dark chocolate, and Thai coconut. We did blind taste tests on our recipes to get feedback. We were spot on with the coconut one. We weren't sure about it, but we've only had to tweak it a tiny bit since the blind tasting. The peanut and the chocolate required more work as there were textural issues. Some testers felt uneasy when they bit into crunchy peanut butter or cocoa beans.
You've given several talks on the properties of insects, mostly in New York. Why there?
Apart from the fact that it's a great place with gorgeous food, it's a trailblazer when it comes to our aversion to suspicious food. Back in the 60s, people considered raw fish to be bait. Cooked was fine, but raw? An entrepreneur opened a sushi bar catering to Japanese businessmen. Within 3 years, there were 10 more in the city. There are now 600, and it's not just there. There were 700 in Los Angeles. The sushi appetite has just soared everywhere. While our company has always been based in Denver, promotion in New York certainly helps with our marketing.
Are your energy bars available nationwide?
Not yet. There are about 200 outlets selling our products, typically sports stores and natural food stores, the former holding the greater market share by a long way. Our target market is the sort who are on the go, outdoor-minded and open to change. Getting into local supermarkets is our end goal. If you can't find an outlet nearby, go into your local gym or natural food shop and tell them you want them to start stocking Endo cricket bars.
Finding all these crickets must be a bit of a challenge.
We had planned to open a cricket farm ourselves and may well go down that route, but at present we're happy to source them. We initially looked at farms in markets where insect consumption is common, like Thailand. Few are geared up for the export market, so we reached out to larger operations at home, such as cricket farms for the pet food industry, and asked them about raising crickets for human consumption. They agreed to tweak their rearing practices to meet health standards. We're working with these partners to achieve a more sustainable, large-scale supply of organically farmed insects, although this won't happen overnight.
How do you farm crickets?
In Thailand, farmers use vegetable waste as feed, which is efficient when you have a smaller setup. Here, the common practice is to feed the crickets livestock feed. There are a couple of paths you can take. You can use wet food products only, meaning they'll get the water they need from their food. This can mean the food easily goes off. To avoid this waste, most use dry food with additional water. You feed them once at the beginning of their lifespan, and that's what they eat until they die 6 weeks later. Now listen to the second part of the test. Section L2. You are going to hear two friends discussing driverless cars. For questions 9 to 13, decide whether the opinions are expressed by Colin, Daisy, or whether both speakers agree. Write B if both speakers agree. Write C for Colin, and write D for Daisy. You will hear the recording twice.
Have you seen this article, Colin, about a new technology exhibition in the US? One car maker predicts that driverless cars will be with us by 2017.
That sounds a bit optimistic, but it's highly likely they'll be with us fairly soon. I think there'll be some reluctance on the part of drivers to give up the steering wheel, though. I wouldn't want to sit there and be driven, and a lot of people buy cars specifically to enjoy the sense of driving.
It's a bit like people using calculators who are no good at arithmetic. It's a technology trap you can easily fall into, but there'll always be those who enjoy mental arithmetic. It'll be the same with driving.
But looking ahead, perhaps a long way, I think there'll be a hybrid system. If you perceive a future where we have driverless cars universally, that implies no one is allowed to drive a car. I see the driverless cars as being for those who can't drive, such as people with a disability or children.
Yes, but that just makes it a taxi service. I think once these cars are introduced, you'd be amazed how quickly the traditional cars die out. Within a few years, I reckon, the skill of driving will be obsolete. GPS systems would need to be reliable, though.
Don't get me started. GPS always sends people the wrong way. And would a driverless car be able to react, say, if there was heavy rain and the road was flooded? Would the car's systems carry on without stopping because it didn't detect the water, whereas a driver would notice it?
I imagine they're already working on all that. They've probably already sorted it out.
Yeah, in your dreams.
Well, it can't come fast enough for me. The daily commute would certainly be less arduous. You could sit and do your paperwork, and I bet the heavy traffic would be sorted out. With cars going at steady speeds, there would be fewer traffic jams.
Remember, there are plenty of people who currently can't drive. Everyone under 17, the disabled, or very elderly. They could all get around in driverless cars and it'd be utter mayhem until, of course, we all change to private automated planes.
What a thought! What about all those who'd lose their livelihood? I read the other day there are over 1 million lorry drivers in this country. How would they be able to make ends meet?
My cousin's a taxi driver, so he'd be one of the first to lose his job. I reckon there'd be a shift of focus, though, rather than a hike in people down at the job centre. People will be trained either in the technology itself or in actually building the new relevant infrastructures. Car parks would be different. Road layouts would change. Anyway, perhaps we're getting a bit carried away here.
Yes, just a bit.
Now listen to section L2 again.
Have you seen this article, Colin, about a new technology exhibition in the US? One car maker predicts that driverless cars will be with us by 2017.
That sounds a bit optimistic, but it's highly likely they'll be with us fairly soon. I think there'll be some reluctance on the part of drivers to give up the steering wheel, though. I wouldn't want to sit there and be driven, and a lot of people buy cars specifically to enjoy the sense of driving.
It's a bit like people using calculators who are no good at arithmetic. It's a technology trap you can easily fall into, but there'll always be those who enjoy mental arithmetic. It'll be the same with driving.
But looking ahead, perhaps a long way, I think there'll be a hybrid system. If you perceive a future where we have driverless cars universally, that implies no one is allowed to drive a car. I see the driverless cars as being for those who can't drive, such as people with a disability or children.
Yes, but that just makes it a taxi service. I think once these cars are introduced, you'd be amazed how quickly the traditional cars die out. Within a few years, I reckon the skill of driving will be obsolete. GPS systems would need to be reliable, though.
Don't get me started. GPS always sends people the wrong way. And would a driverless car be able to react, say, if there was heavy rain and the road was flooded? Would the car's systems carry on without stopping because it didn't detect the water, whereas a driver would notice it?
I imagine they're already working on all that. They've probably already sorted it out.
Yeah, in your dreams.
Well, it can't come fast enough for me. The daily commute would certainly be less arduous. You could sit and do your paperwork, and I bet the heavy traffic would be sorted out. With cars going at steady speeds, there would be fewer traffic jams.
Remember, there are plenty of people who currently can't drive. Everyone under 17, the disabled, or very elderly. They could all get around in driverless cars and it'd be utter mayhem until, of course, we all change to private automated planes.
What a thought! What about all those who'd lose their livelihood? I read the other day there are over 1 million lorry drivers in this country. How would they be able to make ends meet?
My cousin's a taxi driver, so he'd be one of the first to lose his job. I reckon there'd be a shift of focus, though, rather than a hike in people down at the job centre. People will be trained either in the technology itself or in actually building the new relevant infrastructures. Car parks would be different. Road layouts would change. Anyway, perhaps we're getting a bit carried away here.
Yes, just a bit.
Now listen to the third part of the test. Section L3. You are going to hear two extracts from different conversations. After each extract, there are two multiple choice questions. For questions 14 to 17, choose the answer which fits best, according to what you hear.
You will hear the extracts once only. Extract 1. You will hear a woman talking about being a writer. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 14 and 15.
Nowadays, if you have a book coming out, you go all over the country and you really have to flog it. Constantly giving readings or talking about it on the telly is all part of the job. I always try and turn down invitations to festivals though. Often you end up just having to go, but they tend to be chaotic and rather unproductive. Going from city to city doing readings and interviews, I still find quite a thrill. So there you are, beating the drum in front of your book. What's hard is that the book you're marketing is not the one you're currently working on. You've got your present plot and characters in your head, so when people ask you about your recent publication, it takes quite an effort to remember it so well. Strangely enough, in those situations, I am more forthcoming about stuff I wrote 10 years ago. It seems sufficiently detached.
Extract 2. You will hear a man talking about his job. You now have 15 seconds to read questions 16 and 17. Spirit is no ordinary group. So I just have to find as many ways as possible to provide exposure for the music. The standard route is to produce a single, get it into the charts, and then hopefully on the strength of that, sell some albums. Spirit's album has classical and jazz elements and some stunning guitar solos. But I've got to come up with quite an aggressive campaign to tell people this is the album of the year. Spirit's original plan of action was not to release a single or a video from the album. Neither did they intend to tour. They don't quite get it that you do have to play the game of exchanging pleasantries and making appearances. Although they still won't be playing live, they've since reconsidered with a little pressure from the record company and edited the track Look Away down to airplay length. Plans to record a promotional video are currently under negotiation. At least that's not a definite no. Now listen to the fourth part of the test.
Section L4W1. You and your friend are planning a trip to Australia next year. You hear about a company offering trips to Alice Springs on the radio. Write to your friend suggesting you go there. Describe some of the cultural and adventure activities you could do, where you can stay on a budget, when a good time to go is, and how to find out more. Tell your friend about some of the cultural and adventure activities you could do there, about places to stay, when it would be a good time to go and why, how to find out more. You will hear this section once only.
In Alice Springs, the spirit of adventure is well and truly alive, and family-run business Ozbreaks has experiences for any budget. Check out the website www.ozbreaks.com for our full range, but here's a flavour. Relive Alice Springs history and cross the desert on a frontier camel. Ozbreaks offers 1 hour or half day camel rides. For the more adventurous, overnight camel treks are also on offer. For a once in a lifetime experience, rise before dawn for a sunrise balloon flight. We offer daily flights depending on weather conditions, and the desert landscape is breathtaking. If animals are your thing, come face to face with desert creatures at the Reptile Center. View thorny lizards, venomous snakes, and the largest collection of Northern Territory geckos in the world. There's also a rather large spider or two. For art lovers, Alice Springs is considered to be the Aboriginal art capital of Australia. The Art Centre contains an outstanding collection of some of the world's best dot paintings, for which Aboriginal art is famous. We offer 4 different art tours, including art workshops and visits to see rock painting sites in situ. To the west of Alice lies the Western Ranges, a spectacular chain of mountains. They are easily accessible and offer plenty of opportunities for hiking, swimming and observing wildlife. Pathways range from easy to challenging, so there's something for everyone. We organise a wide range of accommodation. If you'd like luxury, the Desert Resort is a tropical paradise. It has spacious air-conditioned villas. If you're on a budget, however, there are several hostels to choose from near Todd River. The River Shack is a popular favourite. Far from being a shack, the rooms are clean and comfortable, and a great River Shack breakfast is included. Contact us at ausbreaks.com to find a package perfect for you. The peak season in Alice Springs is from May to October. If visiting then, it's best to book ahead. At other times of year, summer temperatures can reach an uncomfortable 35 degrees, and flies are a problem. Be aware that in July, temperatures often fall below freezing. May is considered the best month. The choice is yours, but you have been warned. The only difficulty will be deciding what to see next. Let Ausbreaks help you. www.ausbreaks.com. A colourful journey awaits you in Alice Springs.
That is the end of the listening test. Please now continue with the first writing task, section W1.